On this week's On the Media, how our year-long investigation into militia walkie-talkie chat rooms helped unveil an Oathkeeper conspiracy set for January 6th.
Zello, the internet walkie-talkie app, is the number one free app, according to iTunes.
It's us or tyranny, it's us or failure, it's us or a post-American world.
This is not time to be congenial and polite. It's time to go in there and kick their asses.
The continuous engagement with one another through social media has really normalized the notion of the vigilante.
We are in the main dome right now. We are rocking it. They're throwing grenades, but we're in here.
One of my biggest concerns is that we look at January 6th as the end of something. I think we should be more open to the possibility that it was a continuation or even a beginning of something.
It's all coming up right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Has it really been a year?
Fight for Trump! Fight for Trump!
We lost the line!
Over 700 rioters have since been arrested, some 225 charged with assault, over 75 with using a weapon to attack law enforcement. A year later, the January 6th committee has requested information from a crop of high-profile conservatives, including Sean Hannity, Jim Jordan, and Scott Perry, many of whom haven't been so accommodating.
Former Trump advisor and confidant Steve Bannon charged with two counts of contempt of Congress after Bannon refused to testify before the panel or turn over requested documents about his role in the lead-up to the riot.
The full House of Representatives has voted to hold Mark Meadows in criminal contempt of Congress. Former President Trump's White House chief of staff failed to comply with a subpoena from the select committee investigating the January 6th assault.
The Meadows and Bannon cases, along with a trove of Trump White House records, will remain tied up in the courts for several more months at least. In the meantime, we can expect the former president's allies in Congress to continue flooding the news with misdirection and revisionism.
The truth is being censored and covered up. As a result, the DOJ is harassing peaceful patriots across the country.
Let me be clear. There was no insurrection, and to call it an insurrection, in my opinion, is a bold-faced lie. You know, if you didn't know the TV footage was a video from January the 6th, you would actually think it was a normal tourist visit.
Absent a steady flow of big revelations, the press has had to look to emerging clues from the complex investigations into the militias and extremist groups like the Oath Keepers, Proud Boys, and Three Percenters who participated in the breach, which is very likely why those efforts have been the target of Tucker Carlson's spurious logic.
Strangely, some of the key people who participated on January 6th have not been charged. Look at the documents. The government calls those people unindicted co-conspirators. What does that mean? Well, it means that in potentially every single case, they were FBI operatives. So FBI operatives were organizing the attack on the Capitol.
Come on, Tucker. We all know what we saw that day. Though the TV cameras didn't capture everything. The week after the insurrection, we brought you the story of an Oath Keeper named Jessica Watkins, who secretly communicated with other militia members as she marched towards the east entrance of the Capitol.
We have a good group. We got about 30, 40 of us. We're sticking together and sticking to the plan.
Be safe, be safe. God bless and Godspeed and keep going.
Get it, Jess. Do your shit. This is what we lived up for. Everything we
train for.
And eventually inside.
We are in the mezzanine. We are in the main dome right now. We are rocking it. They're throwing grenades. They're freaking shooting people with paintballs, but we're in here.
She was speaking over a walkie-talkie app called Zello, unaware that our reporter Micah Loewinger was listening in. The sound he captured is now being used as evidence by the Department of Justice in its conspiracy case against the Oath Keepers, the largest criminal trial of the lot. Micah had no idea who she was or what she was planning that day, but he had been tracking this type of militia communication for over a year. Back in July, on the six-month anniversary of the attacks, we asked him to revisit his Zello reporting, which we're repeating now with some updates, to chart how the right-wing paramilitaries use the app to lead a violent coup attempt, and also where the movement might be headed next.
When I recorded that Oathkeeper tape on January 6th, it wasn't by chance. I'd begun monitoring militias on Zello way back in the fall of 2019. Not to understand how these groups stormed government buildings, but to hear how they stormed storms.
And we begin with the relentless threat from Hurricane Dorian, rapidly strengthening over the past 24 hours to a monster.
I was looking into this idea for an On the Media story based on a pattern I'd seen emerge during hurricane season. In 2017, as Irma and Harvey ripped through the news cycle, Zello exploded in popularity.
Zello, the internet walkie-talkie app, is the number one free app, according to iTunes.
It's the primary source of communication for members of the Louisiana Cajun Navy.
Civilian volunteers, including a Facebook community of hunters and fishermen, throwing their boats on the back of four-wheel drive trucks and rescuing people from completely different towns. It's an extension of a movement founded during Hurricane Katrina.
Just like with past storms, copycat rescue groups sprung up all across the internet to monitor Dorian as it careened towards the East Coast.
Guys, don't get complacent. It's the calm before the storm. So tonight, you can expect even tornadoes to touch down and all kinds of crazy stuff.
This is a guy who goes by the name 1% Watchdog. He's the leader of a Zello group called the United States Civilian Force, or USCF. They ran the biggest Dorian storm relief channel that I could find at the time, featuring several hundred people.
Those who want to volunteer, go to zello.com/training.
They seem to have a pretty sophisticated operation going, but there was also something else notable about 1% Watchdog and USCF. His podcast and social media were filled with anti-government and InfoWars-type conspiracy videos.
This is part three on our coverage of the Parkland, Florida school shooting, mass shooting. To those of you who are thinking this is a false flag, it might be.
He also had this rap song.
We got the Bill of Rights and our guns too. They think they're coming for us. I say we're coming for you.
The USCF Facebook group advocated for mass deportations of undocumented migrants. And there was something about their combination of humanitarian aid and xenophobia that struck me as a contradiction. But when I brought that up, he and his group strongly disagreed.
Are you guys so sick that you think someone's drowning in a hurricane and they need rescue that we're going to say, show us your papers?
Yes, I wear a Trump hat. Yes, I believe in the wall. Yes, I believe in people coming here the right way. I have no problem with it. But if shit hits the fan and somebody needs help, I'm not going to ask you for your papers first. I'm going to help you.
That second voice is a guy named AJ Andrews. His Zello profile featured a photo of him wearing a Confederate hat. I initially reached out to him to learn more about 1% Watchdog. AJ had collaborated with him for years, but he didn't know his real name or where he lived. Anyway, AJ was much more interested in talking about his own local militia based in Western New York and how they used Zello. He ended up inviting me to hang out with them at Lobby Day, a gun rally in Richmond, Virginia, on January 20th, 2020.
Monday's rally comes in response to three new gun control bills.
Governor Ralph Blackface Northam downplaying Democrats' plans to strip people of their Second Amendment rights.
Pretty disturbing. The governor used the phrase storming of the Capitol for what is possible on Monday.
AJ told me to meet him in a parking lot a few miles from where thousands of right-wing protesters had assembled outside the Virginia Capitol building.
Holy moly, it's cold out.
currently looking for AJ's RV.
This was my first time at this sort of event, which is probably why I didn't think twice about wearing my black winter coat with black skinny jeans. Just about begging someone to label me as Antifa.
Skinny jeans and then dress like that? Yeah, you look a lot like the Antifa.
Damn it.
We ended up spending the whole day in his blue and white RV, what he calls his mobile command center, because it's incredibly decked out.
450 watts of solar on the roof goes down to 690 amp hour battery into a 6,000 watt pure sine wave inverter to give me full power sitting here in the camper.
A satellite set up so that he can broadcast Wi-Fi to other militias that want to come and hang out.
20 USB hookups, a CB with a built-in police scanner to it. I've got ham radio that becomes a mobile repeater.
Enough food for 6 months.
Full medical in here. I've got security in here if I need to pull it out of the cupboard.
He is preparing for the apocalypse, or as he would put it, for SHTF, which stands for when hits the fan.
I've got a team of folks from all over the country watching different cameras, this, that, and the other, and I'm in contact with them all the time.
He met up with his militia here. Most of his guys, I only saw like 5 or 6 of them, but I heard there were more, were headed down to the actual rally. But AJ hung back in the parking lot watching a Breitbart live stream.
How the media works. The media is the greatest threat to American freedom.
He was more than just the eyes and ears of the operation. He was the commander of the QRF, the Quick Reaction Force. Say he saw violence breaking out, or he caught wind of some other credible threat against his guys.
I make a call. I got everybody from 20 miles to 100 miles ready to be here in a second.
AJ identifies as a member of the Three Percenters movement, a primary force in the paramilitary right. I say movement because it's more of an idea or rallying cry than it is a centralized national organization. People like AJ, who are inspired by it, can just start their own 3% cells. That name, 3%, refers to a myth, a disputed historical statistic about the Revolutionary War.
3% of the first 13 colonies fought for, died for, and bled for our Constitution. Then they helped write that Constitution, put it into play for everybody to have their rights and their freedoms in this country. Britain wanted to take our rights away just like a lot of Democrats and liberals and a lot of socialists want to take the rights now and trade everybody's rights for just their freedoms. And just like you're seeing on Breitbart, if people are watching the live feeds on that, they're saying they're sick of their rights being trampled on.
At least 6 three percenters would go on to be charged with conspiracy for breaking into the Capitol on January 6th. Meanwhile, ties between militia and Islamophobic and white supremacist activity had been documented over the past several years, starting in Charlottesville in August 2017.
Minutes ago, we saw the first participants in today's Unite the Right rally arrive, about 40 men and women in camouflage gear, some with militia markings. Virginia is an open carry state.
And then there were 3 militia men connected to a local 3% group who were convicted of plotting to bomb a mosque in Garden City, Kansas in 2016.
Authorities say the 3 suspects are part of a Kansas militia group that calls itself the Crusaders.
Which is part of the reason why AJ led that operation in Richmond, because he wanted to rehabilitate the image of the 3%ers and the militia movement at large.
There's nothing wrong with the name militia. If you carry a 3% sticker, oh, you got to be a racist, you got to be a nationalist, you got to be... No, we're not. We're human, we're American. There's nothing racist about us. We're trying to show everybody that we are adults, we're responsible adults, where Northam's trying to say, oh, the guns shoot people. No, it's the trigger that pulls it by the person. It's not the gun.
The whole time that I sat there with him, he had his earbuds in, listening to his militiamen chatting away on Zello.
Turning point in our country right here.
This is it, man. This governor we got?
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
The worst person in the world.
Everybody's on a channel on Zello, on phones, on comms, working with each other, and it's one giant network. Every single person with boots on ground is in the network together.
About how many people are in your Zello group?
Close to 1,000 right now. And they're involved with their own little groups, and it networks out from there, kind of like a spidered out pyramid.
AJ had kicked me out of his private Zello group a couple weeks before Richmond, so I was never able to really hear him and his guys talking. But I'd signed on to a bunch of public Zello channels, including one run by 1% Watchdog, and I had those recording throughout the day just so I could get a sense of the kind of chatter that was bouncing between militiamen and activists all around Richmond.
Is everybody at the rally already, or are they on their way?
On the ground.
We're still en route.
And at home.
Yeah, from what I'm watching online, there's a lot of people there.
Listening back, some of this stuff gave me chills. I mean, this is 12 months before January 6th, and yet the communication strategy and the rhetoric about the politicians in the State House were eerily similar.
This is not a time to go in there and be congenial and polite. It's time to go in there and kick their asses. If the state troopers get in your way, so be it. Complete the mission. Their world up.
Before I met up with AJ, I figured most of these militia guys were all bark and no bite. But speaking with him convinced me that he was dead serious.
If God says it's my time to go, it's my time to go. I've been shot, stabbed, burned, born with cancer, diagnosed at 4, still got it throughout my body, and nothing's in my organs. I got my sight when I was 1, got hearing when I was 3, and I shouldn't have been born. So, if I'm alive, and there's still a reason, so I'm still gonna do something. There's certain things you gotta step up for. People in America gotta step up for the rights and the freedoms to keep it alive for the next generation. Because without that, we ain't got.
No one was hurt that day, no bullets were fired. But spending time with AJ opened my eyes to the reality of the American militia movement. He and his guys want it both ways. They were ready to go to war, and they have a history of participating in violent, racist, anti-government acts, but at the same time, they want to be seen as a normal part of American life. Patriotic American life. Coming up, how right-wing vigilantism went mainstream. This is On the Media.
This week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Texas doctors confront the reality of the abortion ban.
A violation of the law could result in a first-degree felony charge and a fine of at least $100,000. After Roe was overturned, the message from doctors was, I'm out of here.
Revisiting the abortion laws in Texas. That's the New Yorker Radio Hour from WNYC Studios. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On the Media. I'm Michael Loewinger. The day I spent with AJ Andrews back in January 2020 was my crash course in militia organizing. I walked away with two major lessons. One, that militias and other far-right activists often used public Zello channels to communicate during local demonstrations, meaning I could listen in on events all over the country where violence might occur without having to travel, which the pandemic had made impossible anyway. And two, the right-wing paramilitary groups would use just about any media event, any crisis, to organize and get attention. And 2020 delivered those in spades. The COVID lockdown protests in Michigan.
As protesters moved into the Capitol building, Democratic State Senator Danya Polhanki posted this photo saying, directly above me, men with rifles yelling at us. Some of my colleagues who own bulletproof vests are wearing them.
The Black Lives Matter protests sparked by the murder of George Floyd.
America was on fire.
And conspiracy theories of Antifa infiltrating white suburbs.
Peaceful protests met by armed men and Confederate flag.
Police call it a false rumor that claimed Antifa had 3 busloads of members ready to hit neighborhoods in Maumelle, Bend.
It looks like we are going into the fray tonight, so keep us in your prayers.
This is a militia guy psyching himself up for a showdown with Antifa that never happened.
If I should fall, I want to be remembered as a patriot. Let history show that I stood up against this tyranny.
Last year, I encountered so many of these violent fantasies while monitoring militias on Zello. Frankly, too much for one person to keep up with, so I decided to enlist some help.
I've tracked down around 300 militias.
I teamed up with this guy, Hampton Stahl. He's a senior researcher with ACLID, which is the Armed Conflict Locations and Events Data Project. He's also the founder of a blog called Militia Watch, which he started as a response to sloppy coverage.
Because I had been doing a few years of research into U.S.-based right-wing militia groups and saw that there was a real gap in knowledge as far as the media goes about covering militia groups.
The increased visibility of these armed groups, combined with the anxiety and anger about the news, drove prospective recruits to right-wing forums and Facebook groups where militia guys shared passwords for their Zello channels with step-by-step instructions about how to join.
And so you join the group, and then the officers will invite you for an interview. They'll ask you some questions about what area you're in, whatever sort of ideological requirements there are for joining said militia.
What interested you in the 3% movement? Were you heard about the 3%?
I was actually approached in conversation during a anti-protest of Antifa and BLM in Brandon, Mississippi.
Do all of you have the backing of your family? Do they know that you're on an interview tonight?
I'm the man of the house, so, you know, if I need to go somewhere or do something, that's going to happen.
To be clear, neither Hampton nor I ever pretended to be a militia member or a new recruit. We merely lurked in the background.
So what do you got? What kind of experience you got? Military, law enforcement, medical?
31 Bravo, military police. I know a lot about weapons, munitions, and a fair amount of gear.
It's like a second job. It's us or tyranny. It's us or failure. It's us or a post-American world. Don't give two shits or a flying about anybody that's less than 100% all the in. Are you all the in, over?
I ain't got nothing holding me back, Chris. If it kills me, it kills me.
And the ways in which those groups come together and do recruitment through platforms really has to do with them unapologetically believing that they can actually become a proxy for law enforcement.
Joan Donovan directs research at the Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy at Harvard University.
The continuous engagement with one another through social media has really normalized the notion of the vigilante.
Vigilantes, of course, are not law enforcement. They're not accountable to the public or trained to de-escalate violence. And that's why some observers shuddered at the thought of armed militias, say, standing guard at polling stations last November. Monitoring Zello, we did hear references to violence surrounding the election, but it wasn't about how to start it. It was about how to react to it.
We have to stay vigilant, stay well-trained, and maintain our composure so that we don't ever fire that first shot. That would kill us.
Yeah, roger that, sir. We fire the first shot, we're done. I mean, the public view is turning around about us, and that's the way we need to keep it. We don't need to do anything to tarnish that.
They're fantasizing again, and oh, there's going to be all this, you know, riots in the streets. We got to be ready, guys. We got to be ready. But they're not talking about themselves going out there and doing it.
Megan Squire, a professor of computer science at Elon University, had been tracking discussions of the election from far-right groups online.
The whole vigilantism is couched in this language of protection, and that started in earnest with the reopen protests. Oh, I'm going to protect your business from the police who are trying to shut you down. And then it went to George Floyd. Oh, I'm going to protect you from the looters. I'm going to protect Trump from election meddling. The idea that this vigilantism is justified from a protection standpoint, youch, that's terrifying, because now they have a reason, right? And it's a reason that makes them look like a hero.
And then there's a growing body of evidence that some local police departments are enabling it. Look at what happened last summer during the protests that erupted after police shot Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin. 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse, who had traveled to Kenosha from his home in Illinois, shot three protesters, killing two in an act that a jury has since deemed self-defense. Hours before that, though, he and the Kenosha Guard, a local militia, were thanked by law enforcement. They even offered the vigilantes bottles of water.
We appreciate you guys. We really do.
Rittenhouse provides a template for examining how violence might unfold in the future. Here was an armed vigilante who used social media to find other armed vigilantes. With the approval of law enforcement, they patrolled the streets looking for conflict, which culminated in a tragedy we all witnessed. Both police and social media can play a crucial role in the likelihood of these scenarios recurring. Let's start with the cops. While listening to Zello for our piece that aired in October 2020, Hampton and I observed three times when militia members claimed they had coordinated with local law enforcement. For example, one group called the Georgia 3% Martyrs, aka Georgia 3% Guardians, expressed deep distrust of the police in their chat room, but then claimed to have teamed up with them at a BLM protest south of Atlanta.
When Payne, Evo, J3, and myself rolled up at South Lake Mall and assisted the Morrow Police Department, we were in full battle rattle, and Payne even sighted in on somebody and they didn't mess with us.
The fact that the police are, you know, allegedly standing next to a militia member who is pointing a rifle and looking down his sights at said protester is highly troubling.
I was interested in this, so I reached out to a reporter named Robin Kemp, who wrote for a website that she started called the Clayton Crescent. She was there at South Lake Mall, and she sent me audio of the scene. Don't shoot! She walked with the protesters, about 150 of them.
Almost all African-American people who were marching. There was no violence or vandalism or anything like that. It was like a very joyful, family-oriented feeling of people assembling for the march in the parking lot of the shopping mall on the weekend.
And it's time that we speak up, we stand up, and we let the world know that Black Lives Matter.
Amen. Was this like the only Black Lives Matter protest at the South Lake Mall over the summer?
Yeah, I think that was the only one.
She did not see very many police officers there, and she did not see any militia guys there. If this did happen, then the police and the militia were out of sight, off to the side.
It's very common for militias to either get on roofs or go around corners
Yeah.
and just be staged nearby. There was a Black Lives Matter protest here in Atlanta back in 2016 that I attended, and as I was leaving and took a wrong turn in the parking garage and ended up on the roof, and two spaces over there was a Jeep with four men with rifles in their hands looking out over the protest. There's a lot of work that happens that isn't super visible.
It's worth noting, too, that Zello is just one app that militias used for organizing. I didn't have access to their communication on, say, Telegram or Facebook chat. After we aired this piece in October 2020, the leader of the Georgia 3% Martyrs told Robin Kemp of the Clayton Crescent that four men from his militia did attend that protest, but without his permission. After that event, he said he kicked them out. The Morrow Police Department did not respond to our request for comment. A month after the Morrow protest, I caught wind of another potential police-militia relationship in Georgia.
I got word from Douglas County Sheriff's Department today that they're supposed to have a protest in Douglas County over their monument and Civil War monuments. And they said within the next week, they may reach out and ask for assistance.
And if possible, we'll give it.
That's two guys from the 3% security force speaking on July 2nd, 2020. 1 week later, there was in fact a Black Lives Matter protest at the Civil War Monument, but we couldn't verify that 3%ers actually showed up. When we contacted them last year, the 3% security force denied they had contact with the police, and the Douglas County Sheriff's Department did not respond to our request for comment. The third example of alleged coordination between armed vigilantes and local police actually reveals a course of action for reducing violence in the future. It involves the Michigan Home Guard, a militia that made national news last May when it defended Carl Mankey, a barbershop owner who defied state lockdown measures by reopening his business.
Members of the Michigan militia say they will take action to keep Mankey from going to jail.
We are willing to stand in front of that door and block the entrance. So, yeah, the police will have no entry there today.
A few weeks after that incident, word began to spread that there was an upcoming Black Lives Matter protest in the works. A couple local politicians and at least a couple armed militias, including the Michigan Home Guard, were preparing to attend. Then, Livingston County Sheriff Michael Murphy posted this video to his department's Facebook group.
So here's the deal. I've had personal conversation with Rob from 2A, Mike Detmer, and former Sheriff Bob Bazat. I asked both to stand down to not show up tomorrow. Let me tell you a little story. Back in the mid-90s, there was a KKK rally held on the steps of the old courthouse. That was the biggest non-event that this county has ever seen. The community really banded together and had other activities to do. A handful of people, maybe 20 at the most, showed up for the KKK to do their thing. They realized that they didn't get the reaction that they were looking for. They packed up and left. So it was a beautiful thing. That said, my plea is, if you just stay away, there's no stage for anybody to make this thing go sideways.
That's fascinating.
Isn't that fascinating?
I hadn't seen that.
I think it's a little problematic to like compare the KKK to Black Lives Matter protesters, but I understand the point that he was trying to make, which is that showing up in force in response to something could have the effect of pouring gasoline on the fire.
Yeah, and Michigan has an extensive history with right-wing militias. Referring to these militia as the 2A community is laundering that history through something that is deemed a little bit more politically neutral, a constitutional amendment.
That's a good point. And as I listened to the Michigan Home Guard on Zello kind of making sense of the message from the sheriff, there was some frustration and anger, and I would also say confusion.
So Livingston County Sheriff there requested Michigan Home Guard and other vetted militia groups to come and help him with extra security, and then later came out publicly and said he did not do that. He does not want any 2A people there, and then stay away.
There was a rumor that spread in the Michigan Home Guard Zello group that even after he made that video, he secretly said, no, Michigan Home Guard should come.
No, I still want you there. I just want you to stand back and make sure nobody sees you, more or less.
I still want them to come. I basically just want them to keep a low profile.
Well, that's not shady at all.
Pardon me, but that's bull****. And, you know, he should have just kept his mouth shut.
The next day, the sheriff denied this rumor on Facebook. And again, there's a lot about what happened behind the scenes that we couldn't verify. But by addressing the militias publicly, asking these groups not to show up, the sheriff seemed to at least annoy them to the point that they decided not to go.
Yeah, RLT gave us an official stand down on the Livingston thing.
Sheriff Michael Murphy denied that he was in contact with the militia, and the Michigan Home Guard did not respond to our request for comment when we reached out to them last fall. We couldn't get a complete picture of what happened in any of these examples, but the tapes demonstrate that local law enforcement wield a ton of influence over local militia activity. The police may either ignore, condone, invite it, or effectively tamp it down. Social media companies face a similar choice. In the summer of 2020, Facebook deleted thousands of militia pages. Twitter also booted a bunch of militia accounts, as did Discord, a smaller app that had long incubated far-right groups.
We were very concerned about Discord.
Joan Donovan.
During the rise of the alt-right, because Discord was a minor app and it really wasn't able to understand enough about what was happening on its platform. Because they would see, oh, you know, it's just 13 people. And that ends up being like Adam Waffen. Right? It's a group of people that are coordinating violence.
In the name of white supremacy.
Exactly. And so Zello has to have a procedure and a policy and enforcement mechanisms where they do not tolerate this kind of behavior, unless it's the business model.
You'd think it would be hard for Zello corporate to miss what was happening on their own app if Hampton and I alone could locate 200 far-right groups ranging from Oath Keepers to straight-up Nazis. According to Zello's own terms of service, the app can remove anything that, quote, represents promotion of, celebration with, violent extremist ideologies, groups, and tactics. In the fall of 2020, when we were doing this research, we reached out to the company to ask how it was enforcing its terms of service. In a written statement, Zello told us that the company, quote, allows speech protected by the U.S. Constitution and law. Therefore, Zello does not permit distribution of content designed to incite violence, end quote. For the full response, go to onthemedia.org. Late in our reporting process that year, we spoke with an employee at Zello who asked to remain anonymous. The employee sent us a company-wide email from June 2020 that detailed some of this militia and white supremacist activity on the app. The employee said that in a subsequent company-wide email, Zello CEO Bill Moore said, essentially, that because the platform was not legally responsible for any harm caused by those far-right groups, it would not kick them off the site, nor would Zello implement new moderation practices to deter this type of organizing in the future. From what I could tell, the most concrete action to come out of that summertime meeting was to de-index far-right groups from search engines, which means when you Google Zello 3% or Zello Nazi, those channels don't show up. But they still exist, and you could still find them on Zello. They just became harder to find by people like us. In October 2020, when I filed this story, there was something about the way the militias were talking about their role as protectors who would give their lives for the cause, not to mention the amount of weapons these guys seemed to have. It all seemed like a toxic brew just waiting to boil over. Of course, we didn't know exactly what would happen just a few months later, but among the community of experts we were talking to, there was an inkling of what was to come. This is how I ended the story in October. Quote, "From now until November 3rd, at least, we'll be concerned about the potential for violence around the election. No one knows the answer, but too much blood has been shed already for any police department or online platform to pretend that there was nothing they could have done to help stop it." Coming up, the trail of breadcrumbs leads straight to the Capitol. This is On the Media. This is On the Media. I'm Micah Loewinger. So far in this hour, I've explained how I first came across Zello back in 2019 as I was watching these militia groups organize around hurricane relief. And I've laid out how the app allowed me to document the potential relationships between far-right groups and the police all across the country. It felt like the writing was on the wall, but we didn't know for what. With the events of January 6th, you can see how those pieces began to coalesce. After Zello refused to take action against the militias organizing on its platform in 2020, this is what the app sounded like in the lead up to the insurrection.
January 6th, revolution or bust.
That's what the f*** I got a problem with. How about if all of us stand the f*** up and take this f*** back? Well, I got a problem with patriots not growing a f***ing set of damn nuts.
Once we go operational, this channel will just be for intel gathering and organizing on the backside.
On January 5th, Hampton and I noticed that 1% Watchdog, the guy I introduced you to at the beginning of the show, had created a channel called Stop the Steal J6 with about 100 people in it. The next day, I had it running in the background while I watched the violence unfold on TV.
Okay, guys, we're on open channel here now.
Hey, brother, we're boots on the ground here. We're moving on to Capitol now. I'll give you a boots on the ground update here in view.
That, of course, is Jessica Watkins, the Oath Keeper now indicted for breaking into the Capitol. 1% Watchdog later told me over text that he didn't know Jessica or that she was in the channel, though the two can be heard in conversation.
What percentage of the crowd is going to the Capitol?
100%, and everybody's marching on the Capitol, all million of us.
This next part is what federal investigators seem most focused on.
We have a good group. We got about 30, 40 of us. We're sticking together and sticking to the plan.
More on that in a moment, but first, let's follow her to the Capitol.
And we're about two blocks away from it now, and police are doing nothing. They're not even trying to stop us at this point.
The wild thing about listening to an active insurrection on Zello is the group dynamic. While she's working her way through the mob outside the building, she has 1% Watchdog and others in her ear, sharing intel from home, cheering her on in real time.
U.S. military news is reporting that the national capital has been breached. That's right. This is a can of whoop made in America. Yeah.
Witness in history, Watchdog.
And encouraging her to kidnap politicians.
You are executing citizens' arrests. Arrest this assembly. We have probable cause, acts of treason, election fraud.
Jessica Watkins can be seen in live stream footage taken around this time, showing a line of militia members very deliberately parting the crowd as they approach the doors. Hampton describes the video.
In footage shared by Ford Fisher of News to Share, there is a column of Oath Keepers who are very clearly part of a unit. They march up to the east entrance of the Capitol building just a few minutes before the doors are breached. Ford zooms in on one of the people involved and a patch that he has on his back that says, "I don't believe in anything. I'm just here for the violence."
About three people back, we see Jessica Watkins, dressed in full battle rattle. According to other footage discovered by internet sleuths, she helped lead the crowd in pushing the east entrance door open before fighting her way into the Capitol Rotunda.
We are in the mezzanine. We are in the main dome right now. We are rocking it. They're throwing grenades. They're freaking shooting people with paintballs, but we're in here.
Be safe. God bless and Godspeed and keep going.
Get it, Jess. Do your This is what we lived up for. Everything we trained for.
Following our report on these communications in January, the Department of Justice began quoting these Zello chats in indictments, along with quite a bit of information about Watkins' alleged plans and motivations.
This is a woman who had served honorably in Afghanistan and was from a place in Ohio where there really wasn't much going on.
Marcy Wheeler, an independent journalist who publishes on her site emptywheel.net, has been poring over all of the reporting and court records related to the Sixth.
She was, I think, given an identity in the Oath Keepers that probably replaced what she had in the military. It was structure. It was considered honorable. They could go out and feel like they were protectors of America.
As the inauguration grew nearer, Jessica Watkins indicated that she was awaiting direction from President Trump. Specifically, they say she sent a text on November 9th saying, "If Trump asks me to come, I will."
According to her boyfriend, Watkins had started her own militia, the Ohio State Regulars, as a storm relief group a year earlier. But after Trump lost the election, she ramped up her involvement with the Oath Keepers by recruiting militiamen to come to D.C. to act as private security for Roger Stone. A video uncovered by ABC News shows that at least three Oath Keepers did end up spending time with him in D.C., though I haven't seen anything to prove that he and Jessica Watkins interacted.
Roger Stone doesn't need these people to defend them. I think that that was the lure to get her, to get people. That function of saying, okay, you're going to be security for these VIPs who are one degree from the president of the United States, that's like glamour.
Ultimately, Watkins was able to rope in enough people from Ohio that she was rewarded with an invite to the Oath Keepers leadership chat room on Signal, an encrypted messaging app, in December, which put her in touch with Oath Keepers who had traveled from Florida and Alabama, along with the founder of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, who was in D.C. on January 6th, but hasn't been indicted yet.
So these are these Signal chats, which will form the backbone of the actual conspiracy case.
In fact, the government has those chat logs because they were still on her phone when she was arrested on January 18th.
They got to Watkins before she deleted anything, and she, you know, didn't want to perjure herself. She knew enough not to do that. A bunch of other people did delete stuff.
People in that chat room make up a large chunk of the conspiracy case. But remember, Watkins said,
"We have a good group. We got about 30, 40 of us. We're sticking together and sticking to the plan."
What do we know about the 30 to 40?
Right? I'm waiting for those other 15 people. There's a group from North Carolina we haven't seen arrested yet. Some of them stayed in Virginia, staying at the Comfort Inn in Ballston, guarding the weapons that everyone had stashed there.
The government claims the Oath Keepers stored a cache of weapons for a QRF, or Quick Reaction Force, that would respond to the Capitol armed if President Trump were to, quote, declare an insurrection and to call us up as the militia.
This brings us to the plan, or as Marcy Wheeler says, one of the possible plans.
They were basically talking about preventing the Democratic transfer of power, either by doing something so outrageous in Congress that the expected Biden supporters would rise up as well. Or their just presumptive notion that enough, quote-unquote, Antifa would show up in the streets and they could perform being victims again and sow enough violence to give Trump the excuse to call in the National Guard.
And then by calling in the National Guard,
then you say, well, you can't transfer power. We're in the middle of an insurrection. You can't transfer power. We're at war. You can't transfer power. D.C. has been locked down under the National Guard to protect them from those evil Antifas.
A week after January 6th, Hampton and I sent an email to Zello detailing this evidence that its app had been used by insurrectionists, along with an updated list of over 800 far-right channels. Then we reported those findings in The Guardian. And then, a couple hours later,
Zello released a statement on their site saying that they were appalled by the organizing that was happening on their app and that they were banning 2,000 channels.
Maybe a third or so came from the list of 800 plus channels we sent them.
Oh yeah, for sure. Of the 800 plus, the majority of them are now offline, either deleted by the users or removed by Zello itself.
Many of the groups that we were tracking on Zello relied on that app and its network. And now that network, in most cases, is gone. Is it fair to say that a lot of these groups are sort of in shambles after January 6th?
I think a lot of them are struggling to find their footing, for sure. In some of the channels, I heard people say pretty explicitly that Zello would never ban them, that it was the one thing that they could always depend on. Militias are just like one piece of the broader puzzle. And I think militias themselves are maybe a little bit quiet right now, because if they're smart, they're probably on the lookout for what the FBI is up to.
They've been following a trend over the course of 2021, which is to kind of decentralize, scatter, appear under new names, and try to affect local issues.
Jared Holt is a resident fellow at the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab.
A 3%er group up in Pennsylvania that I took a look into, calling itself the Proud American Patriots Network. They were applying for a 501c4 nonprofit status. They had a scholarship raffle. They were, you know, billing themselves as community service, endorsing candidates. Once you started to scratch the surface a little bit, it became very clear that these folks were, you know, a 3%er militia, or thought of themselves that way, even laying out in their bylines their aspirations to build a training compound and like buddy up with law enforcement and all kinds of stuff.
Hampton and I have seen similar activity in the world of storm relief, where Oath Keepers and 3%ers recast themselves as preparedness groups in an apparent effort to wait out the stigma from January 6th while they recruit and build local support. But even as militia groups attempt to cloak their organizations, it's also possible that the role of these far-right groups will diminish. January 6th and its aftermath has crystallized an idea that had been percolating among researchers, that the far right in America has entered what's called a post-organizational or post-group paradigm.
Both terms really capture what we're seeing in the modern far right.
Cynthia Miller-Idris is the director of the Polarization and Extremism Research Innovation Lab at American University.
Groups do still matter. I don't mean to say that they don't. There are a lot of groups that exist, but the vast majority of people who radicalize into these kinds of movements are encountering the propaganda and the information online, but may never actually formally join a group.
While the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys contributed significantly to the violence and planning on January 6th, about 85% of those arrested after the insurrection had no prior involvement in a formal far-right organization.
One of my biggest concerns is that as a country that we look at January 6th as the end of something, as the culmination of something. We even hear that language a lot.
January 6th was really the culmination of a months-long coordinated effort by Donald Trump.
What happened on January 6th was in many ways the culmination of all of these forces.
It was the last day of the Trump era, and it ended in chaos and frankly disgrace.
I think we should be more open to the possibility that it was a continuation or even a beginning of something in terms of mobilization. When you look at the long arcs of history around the world and how democracies have stumbled, these aren't usually things that happen super rapidly. They are an accumulation over time of many small injuries and large injuries that chip away at people's trust in the system, at their trust in the legitimacy of information, and increase their sense of betrayal and anger and their willingness to believe that violence is a legitimate solution.
Miller-Idris warns that this is not the end of the citizen militia, more like a lull before the next storm hits. But in the wake of January 6th, Zello has gone quiet. The far-right groups have been banned, and the app is no longer the meeting place for all things insurrection. Rumor has it, some members are going back to basics and have started using ham radio to organize. Hampton and I are looking into that. As for 1% Watchdog,
today we're going to be talking about the January 6th Capitol protest and what happened on Zello.
last year when I was reporting this story, Watchdog sent me this clip from a podcast he was working on, which he said would feature an investigation of me.
We'll also be talking about the infiltration and takedown of Zello by leftist media headed by WNYC of New York Public Radio.
I watched his podcast feed waiting for the episode to drop, but it never did. I reached out to him for comment for this story, and again, no response. Then, a militia member leaked me some texts that he'd sent late one night in mid-April. Quote, no more USCF, no more podcast, no more Zello, no more hurricanes. I need my life back. 6 years was long enough to prove to me that there's nothing for us to do other than to wait for the tyrants to make a mistake and to piss off a big enough crowd to take them out.
We've got the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution.
1% Watchdog may have signed off for now, but we're here for the long haul. From the media, I'm Michael Loewinger.
Guns too, they think they're coming for us. I say we're coming for you.
And that's the show. On the Media is produced by Micah Loewinger, Eloise Blondio, and Rebecca Clark Callender. Zandra Ellen writes our unique newsletter. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Thank you.